Instructional material is a growth industry. To verify that, one need only look at the wealth of literature that's out there for dummies. And given that most of those books look at point-and-click methods of accessing the graphical user interface, one must assume that they are sighted dummies. So it's good to find someone who has the ability and inclination to put manuals together that assist us as blind and visually impaired people. John Wilson of the United Kingdom has done just that, and he joins me on Main Menu to tell me all about them. John, welcome to Main Menu, and thank you for joining us. Before we talk about the specifics of the tutorials, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what led you to produce these manuals that you've done?
Well, I'm a visually impaired person myself. I used to be a civil servant, but I took early retirement a couple of years ago in order to do something different, and I took a couple of years out and then decided computing was a hobby of mine, and decided to put a few files and tutorials together because people expressed an interest, and I had an interest in that myself.
One of the things that interests me is that it sounds to me like you're not the typical blind computer user that we hear about, which is generally a younger person. You hear this talk quite a lot about the fact that it is difficult for older people who've been working for quite some time to break habits of a lifetime and learn the whole new technology thing. Is that one of the things that's also motivated you, that you want to make computers comprehensible?
Certainly. I mean, I didn't learn about computers myself until I was about 37, and it was difficult to get into initially, and there wasn't a lot around then, and there probably still isn't as much as there should be around to help people get over the sort of difficult learning curve that you hit when you first meet computers and particular programs and the internet in particular.
So when you got into computers, do you feel you were kind of dragged kicking and screaming because of job requirements, or did you have an enthusiasm for it?
Well, no, but at the time I was working using traditional means at work, and I really had a requirement to be able to read more manuals and legislation by myself without needing a reader, so I got one for that purpose, but it certainly was more difficult to get into than I first envisioned that it would be for the first year. But once I got past the first year, then things became much easier, and I got in a position whereby I could myself pick up a program from scratch and learn it without needing any tuition. So I got into a position where I could I felt I could at a certain stage help other people to get past those initial learning problems.
Yes, it's interesting that you raise that question, because it seems to me that some people are quite happy to pick up the documentation and read it, or even just to explore and get the hang of it that way, and other people really feel they need professional tutelage, they need a manual that's been written with the blind in mind. Is that just a question of competence or different learning styles, or do you think it's a confidence thing? Are people just lacking in the confidence to explore for themselves and get the answers?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is to do with confidence. Obviously, the longer you've been doing it, the more experience you have. But it is a matter of confidence, and I'm sure many people who buy tutorials, if they were really just to immerse themselves in it, would probably be able to work most of it out for themselves. It's also a time factor, though, as well. Obviously, if people are busy working and it would take them a week to learn a package, it's probably cost-effective to buy a manual in which they can perhaps learn the basics in a day. So it's probably confidence, and partly it could well be a time factor for some people.
Yes, and I suppose the sighted community is no different. You know, you have this this growth industry in these books for dummies, so-called.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they seem to sell pretty well. From my experience talking to people around the world on this program, there are two hurdles that people need to get over. The first is actually finding the funding for the technology, because, as you well know, there's assistive technology on top of the regular cost of computer equipment for us. And then there's the question of the training. How are you served in Britain in both counts, in terms of special funding that might be available, and also in terms of the quality of training that might be available around the UK?
Yeah, well, there are a number of companies who provide specialist equipment and provide screen readers. Some they provide that are actually made in the States, but they just sell them here. Others create their own in the UK, and just about all of them provide training packages as well. I mean, the government has a scheme running, an assistance scheme whereby when you're in a job or you're starting a job, they will assess you for whatever assistive equipment you need, be it magnification equipment or speech or braille, and they will provide you with what you need to obtain a job or keep a job.
Does that create a bit of a vicious circle, though, in the sense that if you are at the moment in need of the skills to be employable, are you entitled to the funding at that point so you can get the training you need?
Prior to starting the job, they don't give you the training. They will only give you once you the equipment and the training once the job is secured, which probably makes it difficult in the first instance to get the job if you don't have the skills or the equipment. Unfortunately, it can be a few weeks or even a month or two time lag as well between starting a job and actually getting the training and equipment. I've heard stories of that type, but hopefully the stories I've heard are the exceptions and not the rule. But it can be slightly off-putting, I think, to employers if they know they'll take someone on who won't have the appropriate equipment for several weeks. Perhaps the government could do better to see that they were given the appropriate equipment within the first week of starting work.
All right, well, let's have a chat about why I was interested in contacting you for this show, and that is the manuals that you've written. Can you tell us a little bit about those, the way that they're structured, and the different topics that you're covering in these manuals?
I've written seven since April. The most voluminous one is the internet one, called Accessing the Internet from the Keyboard, the Windows Way. And it uses Windows as opposed to DOS methods of accessing the internet. And it has 20 main sections. I'm about to add a 21st on internet banking and a number of appendices with keystrokes in them and resources and a glossary and so forth. So it covers things like Outlook Express and Internet Explorer 5 and 5.5. The basics of using those, all the basics. It covers some other software such as FreeAgent for newsgroups reading. There are things in it like various types of search engines that are covered, standard search engines and meta search engines such as All the Web and Google, those kind of search engines. And there are sections in to do with download managers, Real Audio, there's one on internet shopping, there's one on using and buying things via online auctions. I'm about to add one on banking, as I said. There's another section on internet chat rooms and so forth. So there's 21 main sections, and I think there's five or six appendices that are covered in that. Other than that, I have one on Word 97, which has about 42, 43 sections, taking people from just an explanation of what a word processor is, comparing it with a typewriter, right from those basics through typing and deleting and word wrap and so on, through many intermediate things such as auto text and auto summarize and labels. There's also footnotes, endnotes, envelopes and things like that, up to some more advanced features such as mail merge. And then the last block of manuals I did, which I finished around this September, are all related, although they're separate entities, but they're all related to off-the-shelf print scanning manuals so that blind people can read print and the mail and newspapers, etc., programs such as OmniPage Pro 10, TextBridge Millennium. Also, I've got one on TypeReader Pro 6 and ReadIRIS Pro 6. So those are the basic ones. The actual scanning manuals, I take people through the main process of scanning, whether it be deferred scanning or scanning by using the program standalone, also through the methods of scanning and having things opened automatically in your favorite text editor or in Word or whatever you would like your programs to be opened up in. There are also methods whereby you can have such as Word or WordPerfect running and invoke the scanning software from in the file menu. So I go through most of the methods of doing that. Also in the manuals, I take pains to explain what the screens are like, how many windows are there and how to cycle through them. And there's usually a section on helpful tips and hints so that people are able to customise their browsers and turn on or off toolbars which they may want or may not want, and basically set up their text, their screen reader or the actual programs themselves to work more lucidly with speech systems, so that any problems such as the, for example, in Word 97, there's a problem usually for most screen readers with the Word assistant. So I tell people how to turn things like that off so that they can more easily get access without the screen reader being troubled.
Well, I have a number of specific questions about those, but let's firstly check out what formats those manuals are available in.
They're available as ASCII text files. Within the UK, they're available by email transfer or on floppy disks. Outside the UK, they're just available by email transfer. But they are plain ASCII text files, so that any text editor or word processor would be able to open them and you'd be able to read them from any of those.
So, for example, the internet tutorial, which sounds extremely comprehensive, how big is that in terms of K, for instance, or megs?
Well, in words, it's 42,000 words at present. After I've added the other section I'm about to put in the next few days, it'll probably be about 44,000 words. Probably come out to about 300 pages of Braille.
Yeah, so that really is a very comprehensive document. You must have been extremely busy churning these out in such a short time.
Yeah. When the internet manual, I've probably spent 12 weeks writing it. Not 12 continuous weeks. I must have spent about 6 weeks initially, and then each week, if I find anything new or anything interesting, I would add it to a new section or some extra resources I may find. I put in the resources appendix and so forth, and occasionally I add a whole new section as I'm about to do with the internet banking chapter.
So what happens if somebody's purchased the manual and then you add an additional section? How does that work?
Well, as long as I've got their email address, they can have another copy, a more up-to-date copy for no extra charge. It's at £10 for the original copies of each of them, or $18. As I say, as long as they'll accept it by email, then I will let them have an up-to-date copy at any time. And from time to time, I automatically email these extra copies out to everybody who I've already got the email address of.
$18 US is a very reasonable price. Do you take credit cards for that, or how do people pay?
No, I just accept personal checks, so they just send me a check, and that's fine.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the internet manual that you've written. One of the things that's quite difficult, and I can tell you as a tutorial writer, that one of the things that's very difficult is the fact that these days, particularly with the internet, things are getting so screen reader specific. If you go into JAWS, you've got the virtual cursor. If you go into WindowEyes, you've got the MSAA mode. How have you been able to handle that issue when you've been talking about Internet Explorer?
The manuals are written from the viewpoint of the shortcut keystrokes which are embedded in Windows itself, so they're not screen reader specific. So I don't teach people how to use Windows or how to use JAWS or HAL. But obviously, the more up to date and the more responsive the screen reader they have, the better will be the feedback they get. So, for example, JAWS has insert F7 to get a list of links. I don't tell people how to use that, although I do recommend that they read the manual and the specific internet keystrokes with their own screen reader. What I would tell them how to do is how to navigate around using the actual Windows keystrokes that are provided. So things like Control O for opening the address field. Obviously, when you're on the net and you've got text up there, the procedure of tabbing through links and paging up and down, or also left and right arrow to move to your last link you were on, or the last page, and alt right arrow to go to the next one, etc. So I teach people how to do it, irrespective of the screen reader that they're using.
And it's much more than the web, by the sounds of the description that you've just given us. You're looking at Usenet News, for instance, and a number of other components of the Internet. How do you go about selecting which client you're going to be focusing on? For instance, you've chosen to work with Free Agent for News. How do you make that choice?
Well, actually, there's a section on Internet Explorer to for news groups as well, but there's also one on Free Agent. Well, I looked at it because I felt that it actually had more keystrokes and more features than and was easier to use and more responsive than Outlook Express as a news group reader. Outlook Express I find as fine as an email reader, but for news groups it's okay, but I found that Free Agent I felt had more to offer and I felt that achieving certain things with it was easier than with Outlook Express. So I put a section on that and told people how and where to download it from, and obviously took it from there and took them through the basics of using it, and provided all the keystrokes in an appendix, plus a blow-by-blow procedure on how to actually achieve downloads and postings and so forth.
So with the document that comes as a text file, you can presumably find quite a number of URLs and other resources that you can simply select and copy to the clipboard and use Internet Explorer to go there.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah, there's probably more than 200 websites. Probably half of them are US-based, half of them are UK. A lot of the sites that take people on, for example, for internet shopping, would be UK sites, since I sell most of them in the UK. But if I quote Amazon.co.uk, there's an Amazon.com in the US equivalent. So I do explain in the manual that if I mention com, then there may be a co UK and vice versa. And obviously, if you're shopping, you need to really to be buying something in the country you're in, ideally. So lots of the sites are UK-based, but there are lots of ones that I mentioned that are US-based as well, and frequently there are US and UK equivalents of the same sites. But there are probably well over 200 resources in one of the appendices, and obviously a lot of them are in the main manual. As I tell people how to download things and how to use them. So I tend to put the main ones within the manual so they don't have to keep looking at the resource section. And then other things that aren't in the main manual plus the resources mentioned in the main manual are in Appendix 3 for ease of finding. Obviously, with it being on disk and being readable within a word processor, the process of finding keywords or sections and section headings is a lot easier and quicker than it would be with a manual, say, on 6 cassettes.
Yeah, indeed. And presumably there's some sort of convention that you've implemented to make it easy to search for a particular string that denotes a new section?
Certainly, yeah. There is a contents, and all of the main sections are mentioned with all of the headings, and the headings are precisely written down as they would be in the main body, so you simply need to use Control F or whatever for fine typing type in the heading, and the heading should be found immediately below in the main body. They're all exactly corresponding to one another, the contents and the headings in the main section.
And the shopping sites that you mentioned, these are ones that you have checked out and found to be reasonably screen reader friendly, I take it?
Yes. I don't go into a large number of them, but I've gone to things like CD Now, Amazon, Amazon.com, and Amazon.co UK, a number of sites like that. Being on to one week in the UK where you can buy British Rail tickets and things like that. That wouldn't be appropriate to anybody in the US, but certainly the Amazon.co UK would translate to Amazon.com with the same kind of site in the US. So I have been on those and bought the odd thing from each of those sites, yeah. The section I'm about to put on internet banking, I've just been on there today and testing it out. I've just opened it only a couple of weeks ago myself. It takes about a week and a half to get all the details through and the PIN numbers and customer numbers. But I was moving money around from one account to another yesterday and today, and so far it's working okay. I don't think I've lost anything.
Oh, it could be quite handy, that information with Christmas coming up, wanting to make purchases and keep track of your finances. I was interested in reading the material that I was exposed to before doing the interview about optical character recognition packages and the work that you've done on commercial OCR packages, other than the blindness-specific ones, because recently on a mailing list that I moderate, there was a very intense discussion about this subject in terms of whether it is necessary these days to have a blindness-specific OCR package. Would you say that there are certain circumstances where a blindness-specific OCR package is still the best option?
Well, The newer packages, such as OmniPage Pro 10 and Tex Regional Lanium, are catching up quickly to the kind of features that used to be specific to blindness OCRs. I mean, at one time, the actual blindness OCRs used to do things such as open documents in an edit field so that you could immediately read them and you could immediately edit them, and the OCR packages didn't have those kind of facilities. You were in an edit field, but one which perhaps your screen reader couldn't cope with, or you couldn't really use very easily from the keyboard and get proper feedback. But now that that these packages such as OmniPage and TextSpeech have made it possible to scan and then launch the actual scanned pro page or number of pages in Word or WordPerfect or Notepad without you having to reopen them after scanning them, the procedure is almost as quick and easily as one of the specialist OCRs themselves. So whilst I can't say absolutely every feature is covered in these off-the-shelf packages now that you might get in a specialist package, certainly they're much closer in ease of use than they used to be. So they are now very usable, and obviously the price difference is quite immense in some circumstances. They're about a tenth of the price.
Would I be right in saying, though, that if you're the kind of person who reads novels on your scanner and you want to listen to the novel as you scan it, so you may be two or three pages ahead, you may be scanning a page, having another one recognized and a previous one before that read to you, that still the blindness package is the only solution for that kind of work?
You would be correct there. Yeah, that sort of scanning is probably where the blindness packages do have the edge. And yeah, certainly, I'm fairly sure that OmniPage won't do that. What you tend to get if something like OmniPage or TextSpeech tries to read while you're scanning, you get a stammering effect on it. You do have to do the scanning, then get it read in your word processor, perhaps by using the read document key or whatever. So you do have to do it first and then read it afterwards.
And of course not everybody chooses to use their scanner in that way, so that may not be a big deal for some. What do you think is the best out of these commercial OCR packages in terms of functionality and accessibility?
Well, obviously it's down to the user to some extent, but I still think OmniPage I would have said was the best a couple of years ago, and I still think it probably is OmniPage Pro 10. It has more features than some of the others. As I say, you can scan within a word processor, or you can scan within the OmniPage itself and open it within a word processor automatically. It also has an automatic scanning mode whereby you can set it to automatically scan, say, every 5 seconds, and you've just simply got to get the pages on quick enough, which is something that the specialist OCR scanners have and the off-the-shelf packages didn't used to have. Now, OmniPage has that, TextSpeech doesn't, so So because it's got that extra automatic scanning facility, plus the fact I think it's just that bit more accurate usually than some of the other packages, and I believe it actually converts or recognises the text that little bit faster as well. So I would say OmniPage Pro 10 has the edge on things like TypeReader and TextBridge. But TextBridge certainly is not far behind it, and it is that bit cheaper.
And these things can change so quickly as people play leapfrog with releases as they become available.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the prices change week by week. I mean, I've mentioned certain prices in my manuals, but I've emphasised that you need to check with your local supplier and the manufacturer because they do change quickly. And often you can get a copy from a local vendor cheaper than you can buy it direct from the manufacturer. It's strange, but certainly I find that with things like TextBridge, I can get it here in the UK for about £30 cheaper than I can buy it direct from Scansoft themselves. And at certain times or at a certain stage in an OCR's life, shall we say, it will be cheaper than others. So when OmniPage Pro 10 first came out, if you didn't have an old copy to upgrade from, they wanted something like £460 for it. If you had an older copy to upgrade from, over here it was £79. Now that it's been out nearly a year, they will sell anybody at the upgrade price because it's perhaps coming nearer the end of its natural life. Although they tell me that they're not bringing out another copy for about the next 5 months. Because it has been out a while, they're now relaxing their pricing and letting everybody have it at the upgrade price. That's over here in the UK. I don't know what their policy will be elsewhere.
Yeah, you certainly pay a premium for having the latest and greatest quite often.
Mm.
Yeah. How friendly do you think these OCR packages are? I guess what I'm asking here is whether you think that the commercial option is one that is best used by experienced computer users, or do you think that a new user would be quite effective if they went straight to a commercial OCR package?
Certainly. Now, I remember when I got my first one, and it did take me a couple of weeks to sort out what was going on because I've not used any of these kind of packages before, even though I knew other computer software. Having said that, at that time I was only just coming onto Windows myself, which was probably part of the problem. If I'd have been better versed in Windows, then I would have probably picked up the first copy of OmniPage I had quicker than I did. But certainly an experienced user, I think, would be able to learn how to get on with the basics after a week or so's playing around with it and going through the manual. Someone who was new to Windows as well would obviously find it more difficult. Hopefully that's where my manual will come in.
Absolutely.
The manual itself, I try and take the hard work and the time-consuming trial and error and combing through online manuals, trying to take that sort of time-consuming hard work out of it by providing a keyboard manual which hopefully simplifies the process in how it's laid out and how it's explained and takes people through most of the main processes on a step-by-step basis, steps 1 to 10, however there might be in it, however many there might be in it to achieve the end result.
And the other tutorial that you've done is one dealing with Microsoft Word, and I suppose that when I fire up a new screen reader, the first thing I do with it is look at how well it's working on the web with Internet Explorer and how well it's working in Word. They seem to be the two sort of litmus tests, if you like. Again, you have a situation in Word where some screen readers are doing a lot better than others. One or two support tables, a lot don't. Did that create any limitations in terms of the subject matter that you would cover, tables in particular?
I mentioned basic tables in the manual on how to create a 2 and 3 column table and so on. Certainly some screen readers do let you know where you are more easily than others. I mean, I think yours is quite good at that because as you move from cell to cell it tells you what table and what cell you're in and so forth as you move along, if you want it to do. So some do that better than others. I don't particularly want to mention particular screen readers, but you do get better feedback from some of these than others. Others you'll probably need to continually be looking at your screen reader's specific command to read the status line to know what cell or what table or what column you're in. Some others will automatically read it out to you as you move around, which certainly for the learner or the person who's less confident is more reassuring and perhaps better.
It really does sound like quite a comprehensive resource, though. You're starting off for those who have never used a word processor before, but instead may have been familiar with using a conventional typewriter, moving all the way up to presumably writing quite academic-type work, because you're covering footnotes and indexes and things of that kind.
Yeah, things like that, yeah. I even cover things like auto-summarize, which can be helpful in a work situation. If you've read a document and you don't have time to go through it again just prior to a meeting, if you use auto-summarize, you can choose 75 or 50 or 25% of the document in which the program then seeks out the most frequently used sentences and phrases. And if you set it, say, to 50%, it will give you 50% of the document, what it believes to be the meat or most important parts of it. So at least you can go through the main parts of a document just prior to a meeting if you don't have time to go through it all. I don't know if you know that feature. You probably do.
Yes, well, it can be quite useful. At least you can seem remotely informed before you attend a meeting.
That's right, yeah. Or you can have read something a few days earlier and just want to be freshened up on the main parts of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I used to find that quite good at work myself when I used to use it.
The secret's out. Yeah. Let me recap then. These tutorials, are they all the same price, or does it differ depending on the volume, as it were, of the material?
No, they're all the same price. The internet one did start off at about 15,500 words, but it's just grown. So It's a lot bigger than it was, but they're all sort of £10 English or $18 US. When I present a cheque, you usually get a small amount of, well, not particularly small, but you get an amount of commission knocked off it, so that it works out around £10 after I've put a cheque in from the US. There's an overhead in commission to pay on that. So they are all £10 English or $18 US dollars.
And with the fluctuating currency rates the way they are, it can be a bit difficult to estimate reliably these days.
Yeah, I mean, some you might lose a little on, so other times you'll gain slightly, but
yep.
That's the current price anyway.
Swings and roundabouts.
It'll go up or down slightly in future, I'm not certain, but perhaps by the time it does that, some of these will be obsolete, and I'll be looking at other upgrades to some of the scanners and some other manuals. I'm not planning on doing any more before January, but perhaps I'll be considering one or two things then, maybe Word 2000, sometime in maybe around April, OmniPage 11 maybe, I would be looking at doing that, and maybe one or two other things that I've been thinking about but not decided on.
And the all-important question then, if people wish to purchase some of these tutorials, how do they proceed from here in terms of getting in touch with you?
Well, my internet address is jwjw@cwcom.net, and the phone number in the UK is simply 011-3257-5957, and from the US it's 011-44-113-257-5957. Certainly, they can order either by phone or by email. As long as when you're outside the US, you have an email address to give me. Certainly, there'll be no problem with provision.
All right, and we have listeners in well over 60 countries now, but I guess the majority are in the US. So, how far at the moment is Britain ahead or behind or whatever it is in time difference?
Well, from the US.
Is it five hours ahead of Eastern Time, I think, is it?
Yeah, about five, because we change our, it's often six or five, I believe it's five at present, because we put our clocks back and forward in summer and winter. So I believe from Eastern Time it's 5 hours, and from the West Coast it's probably as many as 8 hours.
Yes, it would be. If it's 5 Eastern, it would be 8 West Coast. Working for an American organisation and based in New Zealand, you soon get used to some of these time thingies. Look, I really appreciate you coming on the program. They sound like fascinating resources, and all the very best with your continuing work on them.
Thanks very much for phoning and giving me the interview. It's been just as interesting for me.